Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Tens of thousands of people are fleeing South Sudan after 5 days of fighting in Juba, the capital city. Many people are heading south towards Uganda, but the trip is considered extremely dangerous. The South Sudanese are fleeing fighting between forces loyal to President Salva Kiir and those who support First Vice President Riek Machar. Some of the people who have made it across the border are talking about their experiences. One young woman says she barely escaped before a bomb hit her home. Two of her relatives died. She hid for a while in the northern part of Juba before finding a bus and heading south. At military checkpoints, men in government uniforms asked for money and other bribes before letting the bus continue south. People gave away cell phones, laptop computers, and even clothing. Edwin Taylor of Liberia made it through South Sudan as well. He and his brother made the journey safely, but said others were not so lucky. You will see bodies on the road, which are foreigner bodies, cars on the road, people who are coming from the capital. They killed these people, took their cars, robbed them. It's not easy. It was by the grace of God we maneuvered to come here, Taylor said. One Ugandan woman made it home from South Sudan. She said government soldiers were preventing South Sudanese from leaving the country. The United Nations says at least 272 people have been killed during recent fighting in South Sudan. At least 36,000 residents of South Sudan are displaced. Many are staying at United Nations bases and churches in Juba. The South Sudanese government says the fighting started when opposition leader Riek Machar posted a false news report. The report said President Kiir was planning to arrest Machar. Armed bodyguards loyal to Machar arrived at the presidential palace in 21 vehicles. A dispute started, and one guard was killed. A spokesman for the South Sudan Army said he does not know of new checkpoints or more violence on the road to Uganda. But police in Uganda say more people are arriving in Uganda with gunshot wounds. Ugandan authorities say they are preparing for more refugees. They are also placing armed vehicles along the border to make sure fighting does not spread into Uganda.
Water, the saying goes, will find its way. And so it seems to be the case in West Africa. Rising sea levels and erosion along the coast are threatening the homes and jobs of hundreds of thousands of people across West Africa. Grand Lao is one example. The Ivory Coast tourist town is about 100 kilometers west of Abidjan. The waves are swallowing the coastline of Grand Lao's old town at a rate of 1 to 2 meters a year. It is a problem along much of West Africa's coast. The effects could be serious. 1/3 of the area's people live by the sea. The coastal areas contribute about half of the area's GDP, or gross domestic product. Ojan Kafi has spent all of his life on a shrinking patch of land between the sea and lagoon. It is called Lau Kapanda. Pointing out across the water, Kofi says the sea used to be back there, 2 kilometers away. But now, it comes up to just a few meters away from where he stands. He says there used to be people living there and coconut trees. But now, many houses have been abandoned along the coast. Residents moved inland. Coastal erosion is not new. It is a natural event. But experts say human activity is speeding up the process. With global warming, the sea levels are rising around the world. Grand Lao has been hurt by nearby government dams and the practice of taking sand to build houses. Many buildings from the early 20th century have washed away. Water has eroded the fence around the church. It regularly fills the courtyard. And at the cemetery, the tombstones are slowly being covered by sand. For the few thousand fishermen there, making a living has become harder. One says the mouth of the river is stuck in the sand, and they cannot cross with their boats. Bartholomew Bamba is the director of the Center for Ocean Research in Abidjan. They work on prevention and awareness issues. They also advise the Ivorian government on developing future structures like coastal roads. He says there were mangroves, a kind of tree that grow in the salt water of the lagoon. The problem starts when the river mouth is closed, blocking the salt water. The lagoon becomes fresh water and the mangroves die. But the mangroves are very important for biodiversity, keeping different kinds of life in the area. If the mangroves die, Bamba says, it basically ends fishing there. The fishermen say the government could help by removing the sand from the mouth of the river. But experts say the rising sea level is irreversible. There is no way to turn it back. In the end, the people will be pushed inland, too. I'm Anne Ball.
The year 2016 has been the most violent year ever for reporters in Afghanistan, a new report says. The Afghan Journalists Safety Committee released its latest report Monday. The group observes the safety situation of reporters in the country. 10 members of the media have been killed this year. That is the most in the country's history. The group reports a total of 54 incidents of violence against journalists since January 2016. That is a 38% increase compared to the first half of last year. The report also says the government was involved with 21 of the violent incidents. It did not, however, provide details about the people involved. The report also notes the number of Taliban-linked cases has increased. The Taliban reportedly was responsible for 16 cases of violence against journalists. The Safety Committee's latest report also says that the number of women working in media in Afghanistan has decreased since 2014. However, the report calls Afghanistan's mostly free media and freedom of expression the greatest achievements of the past 15 years. But it said Afghan media still faces serious challenges. This was the seventh report produced by the Afghan Journalists Safety Committee.
In 1924, architects created a modern house for a wealthy family in Beirut, Lebanon. People called it the Yellow House. The building was well known for its unusual style. But after 1975, when a civil war struck Beirut, the Yellow House became known for another reason. The building stood at the intersection of what was known as the city's Green Line. The line divided the warring parties of East and West Beirut. Its location made the Yellow House perfect for people who wanted to look over the city and kill others. Snipers took over the house. It went from an avant-garde, innovative presence in the city to become a tool for killing, a murderous house, explained Yusuf Haidar. He is the architect responsible for renovating the building, which is now called Beit Beirut, or Beirut House. The building will reopen to the public in September. This time, it will be a memory museum. Some people don't want to remember because they were guilty of crimes in the war, Haidar explained. But, he added, I believe that remembering is important. Muna Halat is the person who is most responsible for transforming the Yellow House into a museum. She first stepped into the abandoned building in 1994. On the floor, she saw things from families and businesses that once used the space: school photos, letters, film from a photography shop. At the same time, the building still had snipers' sandbags, graffiti, and bullet holes. On one wall, someone had written the word hell. Halat said being in the house reminded her of the war. She recalled the snipers and the stories about people being killed. But she also felt hope. The city planned to tear the building down, but Halat fought to keep it. She and others eventually succeeded in making it a museum. Evidence of the war, including the bullet holes and graffiti, remain. But architects have also added an underground theater and a glass facade. Halat is now gathering exhibits for the museum. She explained, she hopes they will allow people to tell their stories. Beirut is changing, she said. Many of the old buildings are being replaced by modern apartments and offices. She said something is being lost. That includes the unusual architecture of the Yellow House and the things people left on its floor. These aren't just buildings. It is the traditions and quality of the lives of those who lived here, Halat said. Those traditions and lives, she explained, make Beirut different from Dubai or from any other city. Beit Beirut may focus on the past, but it has the power to shape the future. Some early visitors to the museum included the family of Fuad Koza. Koza was an architect in 1932. He added two floors to the original Yellow House. Koza's daughter is named Nadine. She hopes that younger generations will visit the building and learn from it as a reminder of never again. I'm John Russell.
This is What's Trending Today. Juno is the name of the spacecraft made by NASA that is now orbiting Jupiter after a 5-year journey. NASA recently activated Juno's solar-powered camera to send images of Jupiter back to Earth. NASA posted the first of what is expected to be many images of the solar system's largest planet earlier this week on Facebook. And people have been sharing and liking these photos. Others leave comments on NASA's page about Juno. Krissa Hanna explained how Juno got its name. It honors the story of Jupiter and Juno in Roman mythology. Jupiter was the most powerful god. He was married to Juno, but he had other lovers: Io, Callisto, Europa, and Ganymede. Those are the names of Jupiter's moons. In Roman mythology, Juno went to investigate Jupiter, just like what NASA is doing now. And that's What's Trending Today. I'm Dan Friedel.
For VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. Today, we have a special guest host. Betty Azar is the most successful writer of grammar textbooks in the world. Generations of English learners will recognize her best-selling book, Understanding and Using English Grammar. The famous Blue Grammar book, now in its 4th edition, is in use at language schools across the world. Ms. Azar also supports research and professional development in the English language teaching field. Today, Ms. Azar will offer some advice on how to hear the sounds of grammar.
English speakers talk too fast. I can't understand what they're saying.
Does that sound familiar? It's a common complaint of English language learners, one I've heard often from my university-level ESL students through the years. Normal contracted speech, especially in everyday conversational usage, can speed by like a bullet train. It can leave learners feeling a little dazed as they try to catch the meaning. For most adult learners, reading is, of course, much easier to understand. When understanding English is just between you and the written page, you can go as slowly as you want. You can go back and read words again, perhaps break down the grammar. You can even leisurely look up the meaning of a word. And at least in writing, there are spaces between words. If only that were true in speaking. If only speakers paused briefly between words, it would be so much easier for learners. Teachers in second language classes often speak slowly and distinctly, as I am doing now. But in the real world, well, it's not going to happen. Or, to say that in normal contracted speech, well, it's not going to happen. Speakers squeeze sounds together, or drop sounds, or say them so softly and quickly that a listener can barely hear them. When you listen to my sentence again, notice that the T is almost completely dropped from its, and going to becomes gonna. Well, it's not gonna happen. As a teacher, I've often heard students say things like, "Bye, I leaving now, I see you tomorrow." What's missing? The grammar sounds are missing. In this case, the M and L sounds for am and will. Listen for them in the corrected sentences. "Bye, I'm leaving now, I'll see you tomorrow." The M and L sounds are barely said aloud, but a native speaker hears them, do you? Listen again. "Bye, I'm leaving now, I'll see you tomorrow." And then, sometimes, native speakers drop not only sounds, but complete words. Listen to this. "Bye, leaving now, see you tomorrow." If you're saying "not fair," you're not the first English learner to feel that way. Grammar students learn that am is are and helping verbs, for example, will, have, would, are often contracted with pronouns in both speaking and writing, as in I'm and I'll. But most students also find it helpful to know that in everyday spoken English, these verbs are usually contracted with nouns and question words, too. Here's a sentence about a man named Tom. Tom is a noun. In writing, you will see, "Don't worry, Tom will be here soon." In speaking, you will hear, "Don't worry, Tom will be here soon." Listen for "Tom will" again. "Don't worry, Tom will be here soon." Here's another example of a contraction with a noun. "My book is on the table" becomes, "My book's on the table." And another example, this time with "are." In writing, you will see, "My books are on the table." In speaking, you will hear, "My books are on the table." Again, "My books are on the table." The verb sounds are so quick that it's almost impossible to hear them unless you expect to hear them. Listen again. "My book's on the table." "My books are on the table." Question words, such as "where," "when," "why," are similarly contracted in speech. In writing, each word is separate. For example, where are the students? Where have they gone? In spoken English, the question word is contracted with the verb. Where are the students? Where have they gone? Again, where are the students? Where have they gone? No wonder it's hard for learners to catch these grammar sounds. If you think English speakers talk really fast, you're right, they do. Do and did are also often reduced. Listen for do you. Do you know Mrs. Lee? Again, do you know Mrs. Lee? Did can be a quick D sound when it's combined with a question word. Listen for where did and what did. Where'd she go? What'd she do? Again, where'd she go? What'd she do? Here's another example of shortened spoken English that my students usually enjoy. Two people are talking. Dice? No, giù. In other words, spoken slowly, did you eat yet? No, did you? Did is a good example of a function word. A function word gives grammar information. In the sentence, did you eat yet? Did tells us that the speaker is talking about the past and is asking a question. In contrast, eat is a content word. So are words such as Tom, yesterday, lunch. Content words have specific meanings. Function words are the ones that are the hardest to hear in speech. Content words are usually said more clearly and loudly. Along with helping verbs, other common function words are and, to, the, and a. Let's look at and. And shows the relationship between two nouns. Bob and Tom tells us there are two people. Like most function words, and is usually reduced. I had lunch with Bob and Tom yesterday. A learner could easily think that Bob and Tom is one word. To is usually reduced to a slight T sound. Let's ask Tom to come with us sounds like, let's ask Tom to come with us. Again, let's ask Tom to come with us. The and a can be especially hard for learners to hear. Listen for the and a. In class yesterday, I asked the teacher a question. Even if you know the and a are supposed to be there, you have to listen hard to hear them. Listen again. In class yesterday, I asked the teacher a question. Native speakers can hear the softer sounds of function words, but it can be very difficult for second language learners to hear them. Knowing some grammar can help. For example, learners are more likely to hear and to say, "By I'm leaving now, I'll see you later," if they are familiar with the forms and meanings of verb tenses. If learners don't know what grammar sounds they're supposed to hear, chances are they won't hear them. If they don't hear them, chances are they won't include them in their own speaking and writing. In other words, an awareness of grammar can prepare you to understand what you're hearing, and hearing the sounds of grammar can, in turn, help you use English more accurately. I'm Betty Azar.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.